And we'll read from mantra number 10. And that you'll find in your white book that's on top of your stand. And this is on page number 69, mantra 10. Anyarevahur vidyaya, anyarahur avidyaya, iti shushumatiranam, yenastad vijichakshire. Word for word, all say please repeat. Anyat, different. Eva, certainly. Ahu, said. Vidyaya, by culture of knowledge. Anyat, different. Ahu, said. Avidyaya, by culture of nations. Iti, thus. Shushuma, I heard. Tiranam, from the sober. Ye, who. Naha, to us. Tat, that. Vichachakshire, explained. The translation altogether. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge, and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Purport. As advised in chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, 13:8-12, one should culture knowledge in the following way. 1. One should become a perfect gentleman and learn to give proper respect to others. 2. One should not pose himself as a religionist simply for name and fame. 3. One should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, by the thoughts of his mind, or by his words. 4. One should learn forbearance even in the face of provocation from others. 5. One should learn to avoid duplicity in his dealings with others. 6. One should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization, and one must submit himself to such a spiritual master, render him service, and ask relevant questions. 7. In order to approach the platform of self-realization, one must follow the regulative principles enjoined in the revealed scriptures. 8. One must be fixed in the tenets of the revealed scriptures. 9. One should completely refrain from practices which are detrimental to the interest of self-realization. 10. One should not accept more than he requires for the maintenance of the body. 11. One should not falsely identify himself with the gross material body, nor should one consider those who are related to his body to be his own. 12. One should always remember that as long as he has a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, old age, disease, and death. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. The best course is to find out the means by which one may regain his spiritual identity. 13. One should not be attached to more than the necessities of life required for spiritual advancement. 14. One should not be more attached to wife, children, and home than the revealed scriptures ordain. 15. One should not be happy or distressed over desirables and undesirables, knowing that such feelings are just created by the mind. 16. One should become an unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and serve him with rapt attention. 17. One should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place with a calm and quiet atmosphere favorable for spiritual culture, and one should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. 18. One should become a scientist or philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge, recognizing that spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body. Did you like the list? What did you like about it?
Not anything specific, but I just remembered number six, which is one should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization, and one must submit himself to such a spiritual master, render him service, and ask relevant questions. That's just, I happen to pay more attention to that while reading this.
Anything from your side?
I like number four. One should learn forbearance even in the face of the provocation from others. So, I mean, these days it's not just people make you angry, but even all the situation, the economy, or the even heat, or everything agitates you. So how it teaches the tolerance.
Tolerance is a big topic in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, isn't it? There are many places where Krishna talks about tolerance. Like where?
There is one place in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says the happiness and distress, I don't remember completely, but it's like a hot and cold seasons, and one must try to tolerate
them. Well, that's
them.
Relevant for today, isn't it? It's cold in here, isn't it? You guys cold? You feeling chilly? Matra sparshas tekonteya shitoshna sukatukada agama payino nityas tamstatik shashvabharata. So that verse is from the second chapter. This is just at the outset. Krishna says that whatever the situation in heat and cold, matra sparshas tekonteya shitoshna sukatukada, that we should be tolerant, right? Tadiksha, you want to read the verse? Okay. Matra sparshas tukuntaya. Shitoshna sukadukada agama paino nityas tamstitiksha shvabharata. Happiness and distress come like winter and summer seasons. One must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed.
Okay. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance is in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception. O son of Bharata, one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed.
Page number?
84.
Okay.
214.
In the proper discharge of duty, one has to learn to tolerate non-permanent appearances and disappearances of happiness and distress. According to the Vedic injunction, one has to take his bath early in the morning, even during the month of Magh, January, February. It is very cold at that time, but in spite of that, a man who abides by the religious principles does not hesitate to take his bath. Similarly, a woman does not hesitate to cook in the kitchen in the months of May and June, the hottest part of the summer season. One has to execute his duty in spite of climatic inconveniences. Similarly, to fight is the religious principle of the Kshatriyas, and although one has to fight with some friend or relative, one should not deviate from its prescribed duty. One has to follow the prescribed rules and regulations of religious principles in order to rise up to the platform of knowledge, because by knowledge and devotion only can one liberate himself from the clutches of Maya, illusion. The two different names of address given to Arjuna are also significant. To address him as Kaunteya signifies his great blood relations from his mother's side, and to address him as Bharata signifies his greatness from his father's side. From both sides, he is supposed to have a great heritage. A great heritage brings responsibility in the matter of proper discharge of duties. Therefore, he cannot avoid fighting. So it says that one must learn to tolerate without being disturbed. So how do you learn how to tolerate, Satyadeva Prabhu?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think, at least I know myself, a lot of times when I've read this verse, I've focused on the toleration part of it, you know. And a lot of times when we hear the word tolerate, we're thinking that we just have to bear our suffering. But that's actually tolerating while being disturbed, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. So Krishna is saying here, tolerate without being disturbed. Mm. So yeah. So how do we do that? And I think one hint Krishna is giving here is explaining that the happiness and distress are coming from sense perception. In other words, they're not coming from the self. They're coming from the mind and the body. And so if we can become aware of ourself and observe the reactions of the mind and the body, then we can be undisturbed. But if we react to the happiness and distress, or you know, we for the heat, like some people like the heat, so they're happy about the heat, and some people like me don't like the heat so much, so they don't like it. So there's in the mind and in the body, there's an automatic reaction to either a happy reaction or an unhappy reaction to whatever we're perceiving through the senses. So in this case, we're perceiving the heat. So we may have an unconscious, spontaneous dislike or an unconscious, spontaneous like. So or attachment or happiness or distress. And so this is the conditioning that's in the mind. This kind of unconscious reaction, liking or disliking. And if we react unconsciously, then we remain in a state of identification with the mind and the body, and we don't really wake up. So if we're tolerating the heat, but we're at the same time, you know, cursing under our breath, I hate this heat, I hate this heat, or we're just suffering, then we're tolerating, but we're remaining in the bodily conception of life. We're remaining identified with the sense perception, which is really a mental perception, because the mind interprets the experience. We already, according to our past experiences, whatever we're experiencing in the moment, the mind is already filtering and already has judgments and preconceptions about the experience we're having. So if you grew up in a hot climate, maybe you might like the heat, and you might already have the conception, I'm a person who likes the heat. Right? We have that identification about ourselves. Yes, I grew up in a hot climate, I like the heat. So when it's hot, we already have that preconception, we already have that conditioning, and according to the mind interprets it as, yes, this is a good thing. Right. And if we've grown up in a cool climate, maybe in Moldova, or is Moldova hot in the summer and cold in the winter? Yeah. Then, of course, if you grow up in San Francisco, especially if you grow up on the coast like me, then if it's too hot, I don't like it, and if it's too cold, I don't like it. Right? So I have that conditioning there, and I have this conception of myself. Yes, I grew up in San Francisco. That's who I am. And so, according to whatever's appearing in the moment, our mind is already perceiving it in a certain way. So it's like this one Greek philosopher, I forget his name, Epictetus. He said, we're not actually disturbed about what's happening to us. That's not what's causing our disturbance. What's causing our disturbance is what we think about what's happening to us. Yeah. And that's where the happiness happiness and distress is actually occurring. And so if we can actually see that, if we can observe the reaction of the mind and the body, then actually we can remain peaceful even though the mind and the body may be disturbed. And we can just let that go and remain present in the awareness that we are the awareness, which is always the same. It's not changing. It's always peaceful, and it's always complete, and it's always joyful. In spite of the mind maybe having so many thoughts about the heat, and the body may be sweating. If we can stay aware of the reaction of the mind, then we don't identify with it, and then we can stay undisturbed. We can actually tolerate and be undisturbed, even though the mind and the body may be disturbed. And then Krishna actually says in the next verse that one who can tolerate without becoming disturbed is candidate for liberation. Another, because he's no longer identified with the mind and the body. That's, you could say that's the test. You know, if you're identified or not. If you're disturbed, then you're in identification. If you're not disturbed, then you must be on a higher plane of consciousness. And all of these verses that are mentioned, that Krishna explains the process of knowledge that we just read in the Isha-Upanishad, they're actually in the context to the question that Arjuna asked Krishna in the beginning of the 13th chapter. He asked Krishna, what is knowledge? And Krishna defined knowledge as one who knows the difference between the knower and the field. And so that's the same thing. When we're aware of ourself as different than the mind and the body, then we're aware of the knower, and then we're aware of the field, and we're aware of the differences. And so these 18 aspects of knowledge, if one cultivates them, it will bring one to the point of having this realization that one is not the mind, not the body, that one is pure awareness. Ijo.
Arigato. Continuing on page number 71, Sri Shupanishad. These 18 items combine to form a gradual process by which real knowledge can be developed. Except for these, all other methods are considered to be in the category of nescience. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great acharya, maintained that all forms of material knowledge are merely external features of the illusory energy, and that by culturing them, one becomes no better than an ass. This same principle is found here in Sri Isha-Upanishad. By advancement of material knowledge, modern man is simply being converted into an ass. Some materialistic politicians in spiritual guise decry the present system of civilization as satanic. But unfortunately, they do not care about the culture of real knowledge as it is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Thus, they cannot change the satanic situation. In the modern society, even a boy thinks himself self-sufficient and pays no respect to elderly men. Due to the wrong type of education being imparted in our universities, boys all over the world are giving their elders headaches. Thus, Sri Isha-Upanishad very strongly warns that the culture of nescience is different from that of knowledge. The universities are, so to speak, centers of nescience only. Consequently, scientists are busy discovering lethal weapons to wipe out the existence of other countries. University students today are not given instructions in the regulative principles of brahmacharya, celibate student life, nor do they have any faith in any scriptural injunctions. Religious principles are taught for the sake of name and fame only, and not for the sake of practical action. Thus, there is animosity not only in social and political fields, but in the field of religion as well. Nationalism has developed in different parts of the world due to the cultivation of nations by the general people. No one considers that this tiny earth is just a lump of matter floating in immeasurable space along with many other lumps. In comparison to the vastness of space, these material lumps are like dust particles in the air. Because God has kindly made these lumps of matter complete in themselves, they are perfectly equipped with all necessities for floating in space. The drivers of our spaceships may be very proud of their achievements, but they do not consider the supreme driver of these greater, more gigantic spaceships called planets. There are innumerable suns and innumerable planetary systems also, as infinitesimal parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. We small creatures are trying to dominate these unlimited planets. Thus we take repeated birth and death and are generally frustrated by old age and disease. The span of human life is scheduled for about 100 years, although it is gradually decreasing to 20 or 30 years. Thanks to the culture of nations, befooled men have created their own nations within these planets in order to grasp sense enjoyment more effectively for these few years. Such foolish people can draw up various plans to render national demarcations perfectly, a task that is totally impossible. Yet for this purpose, each and every nation has become a source of anxiety for others. More than 50% of a nation's energy is devoted to defense measures and thus spoiled. No one cares for the cultivation of real knowledge, yet people are falsely proud of being advanced in both material and spiritual knowledge. Sri Ishapanishad warns us that this faulty type of education in the Bhagavad Gita gives instructions as to the development of real knowledge. This mantra states that the instructions of vidya, knowledge, must be acquired from a dhira. A dhira is one who is not disturbed by material illusion. No one can be undisturbed unless he is perfectly spiritually realized, at which time one neither hankers nor laments for anything. A dhira realizes that the material body and mind he has acquired by chance through material associations are but foreign elements, therefore he simply makes the best use of a bad bargain. The best use of a bad bargain. Did you ever get a bad bargain? Always. Huh? Always? Walk away with a bad bargain. We might as well make the best use. But in another sense, it's actually the best bargain you can get, the human body, because it's so rare, and it gives full facility for going back to Godhead. And it's declared in the Shastra to be the best opportunity, even better than being a demigod. Someone tells you you have 10 billion years to live, you might put off your serious spiritual practice for a while. But if you have 60 years or 70 years, you can see the end coming and really seriously cultivate something. Nrideham adyam sulabam sadulabam plavam sukalpam guru karanadaram mayana kunyena de basvateritam puman bababdin natareet sa atmaha. So puman bababdim. Bava abdim. Bava means the birth and death, like this experience we're having here in the material world of being born and dying. Puman, the person, Puman Bhavabdin Taretsa Atmaha, one who doesn't take advantage of this opportunity to cross over the ocean of material existence, is an Atmaha. That means a killer of the self, or, you know, it's practically killing the self because you've given up such a rare opportunity, which is described as being like a boat. Nrideham, you can find it in your shloka book, Nrideham adyam sulabam sudulabam means it's the most rare opportunity. The human body is like a boat, and the boat has to have a captain, and it also has to have good winds to blow it across. Mayana kulyena nabasvateritam means the instructions from the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam are the favorable breezes, and karnadaram means the captain of the ship. See, 279 in your shloka book. That's this pink book that says shlokas on the outside. Ramananda Prabhu, could you grab that book out of the shelf, please? 279.
Which book?
That'll be 11-2017. The human body, which can award all benefit in life, is automatically obtained by the laws of nature, although it is a very rare achievement. This human body can be compared to a perfectly constructed boat having the spiritual master as the captain and the instructions of the personality of Godhead as favorable winds impelling on its course. Considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize this human life to cross the ocean of material existence must be considered the killer of his own soul. Hare Krishna. Okay. 275, also the same verse. How can that be?
Almost the same.
Oh, right. Labva sudulabham idam bahuv sambhavante. Page 275 in the shloka book. Manusha martadam anityam pihadira. Turnam yateta napater anumrit yuyavan shreyasaya nivishaya kalusarvatasyat. After many, many births and deaths, one achieves the rare human form of life, which, although temporary, affords one the opportunity to attain the highest perfection. Thus, a sober human being should quickly endeavor for the ultimate perfection of life, as long as his body, which is always subject to death, has not fallen down and died. After all, sense gratification is available even in the most abominable species, whereas Krishna consciousness is only possible for a human being. Both the verses talk about how rare it is to get a human body. And here it is. Nridehamajam sulabham sudurlabham. This is in a chapter called Pure Devotional Service. It's spoken by Krishna to Uddhava, and the purport to this verse is, the human body, which is obtained after passing through many inferior forms, is created in such a way that it can award the highest perfection of life. A human being is supposed to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the bona fide spiritual master is the appropriate guide for such service. The causeless mercy of Lord Krishna is compared to favorable winds that help the boat of the body to ply smoothly on the course back home, back to Godhead. Lord Krishna gives his personal instructions in Vedic literature, speaks through the bona fide spiritual master, and encourages, warns, and protects his sincere devotee from within the devotee's heart. Such merciful guidance of the Lord moves a sincere soul quickly on the path back to Godhead. But one who cannot understand that the human body is a suitable boat for crossing the ocean to material nations will see no need to accept a captain in the form of a spiritual master and will not at all appreciate the favorable winds of the Lord's mercy. He has no chance of achieving the goal of human life. Acting against his own self-interest, he gradually becomes the killer of his own soul. Continuing the Sri Upanishad. Thank you. To follow the regulative principles, this is on page 74, the second paragraph, one must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. The transcendental message and regulative principles come down from the spiritual master to the disciple. Such knowledge does not come in the hazardous way of nascent education. One can become a dhira only by submissively hearing from a bona fide spiritual master. Arjuna, for example, became a dhira by submissively hearing from Lord Krishna, the personality of God in himself. Thus, the perfect disciple must be like Arjuna, and the spiritual master must be as good as the Lord himself. This is the process of learning vidya, knowledge, from the dhira, the undisturbed. An adhira, one who has not undergone the training of a dhira, cannot be an instructive leader. Modern politicians who pose themselves as dhira are actually adhiras, and one cannot expect perfect knowledge from them. They are simply busy seeing to their own remuneration in dollars and cents. How then can they lead the mass of people to the right path of self-realization? Thus one must hear submissively from a dhira in order to attain actual education. Points? Yes.
I like the point that how it these 18 items are there.
Mm-hmm.
How with the mercy of guru, with the gradual process that one can attain. It's just how nicely it's mentioned in this verse. And so how the spiritual master is important to understand this all 18 items, and how one can come to the stage of dhira with the help of spiritual master to practice these 18 items.
What aspect of that do you like? Why do you like that?
Actually, I liked it because last time Satyadeva Prabhu read from the 13th chapter, that 8 to 12, that how humility, pridelessness, tolerance, that can be achieved or developed, and how it's described here that this is real knowledge and it can be developed through the gradual process. Mm. And how a spiritual master helps in this process. So I just thought that knowledge itself is very profound.
Is it that it, especially that it's gradual, and that you can cultivate, right?
Cultivate, and then there is a teacher to guide you through this.
So cultivation is a gradual process, and by approaching a teacher, then you can get the perfection of that knowledge, right?
And it just makes it seem like it's possible.
Mm.
With the help.
Mm. So, gradual process. Any comments about how this is a gradual process? What does that mean? That it's gradual. Want to look up the word gradual? Yeah. Okay, Malini's got some shlokas going. You were quoting Brahma Sanghita?
Yes, Prabhuji.
I don't think it's in the shloka book, that one, is it? You find it in your Brahma Sanghita, though. Can you... the Sanskrit will be in there, but you want the translation, right?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Can somebody grab her Brahma Sanghita? Pramanais tatsaracharais tarabhyasir nirantaram bodhayanatmanatmanam bhaktimapyutamam labet.
It just opened up that page.
Wow, there it is.
This is verse from Brahma Samhita, text 59. It's Pramanais tat sadacharais tad abhyasaya nirantaram bodhayan atmanatmanam bhaktim apyuttamam labhet. Translation, the highest devotion is attained by slow degrees by the method of constant endeavor for self-realization with the help of scriptural evidence, theistic conduct and perseverance in practice. So, gradual, when you say gradual, I was thinking about this verse because when we were reading Brahma Samhita, last time when you spoke about this verse, you said that you should write this on the inside of our eyelids and then remember this verse. And the part that I like about this verse, it says by slow degree it says constant endeavor, like even slowly doesn't mean that you just wait not doing anything, but the endeavor should be constant in slow degrees. And with the help of scriptural evidence, again, knowledge, what Hansapriya was saying. And then theistic conduct is following the previous acharyas on how how they have followed this process of Krishna consciousness and perseverance in practice. So many times it happens that we think that we are doing some kind of an endeavor, but we don't see the results immediately. Then in a normal material situation, you may get discouraged, thinking that, why is that I don't see any results? But in spiritual life, we should be very patient in our practice and having full faith that it will happen by following the previous acharyas. So I just thought.
Nice points and nice verse. Yes, and gradual means?
Gradual.
Oh, is that what you were looking up?
Yes, gradual is...
Yeah, go ahead.
But I was just planning to ask a question.
Okay.
Regarding this gradual.
Yes.
Gradual generally means slowly. Does it mean that, let's say, achieving, going back to Godhead, let's say we need 100 points to get there, and we're at 0 points right now, let's say. Can we go from 0 points to 100 points in a gradual way in one lifetime, or it takes several lifetimes because of the effect of the gradual?
You can go in one lifetime. One of these lifetimes. And so, one lifetime you can go. And really, it's... there's a statement by Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of... we're leaving that door open just to keep air coming in. We get from Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion a mention that no one can take up devotional service in this life who hasn't practiced it in a previous life. And then he says that if someone gets some special mercy, then he may be able to come up to that position and practice also. So both things can be there. And Srila Prabhupada also mentions that we always have the ability to surrender. You can't count that out. And in one discussion where a man was asking about adhikari, qualification for surrender, Prabhupada objected, and he said, no. He said, you don't need adhikari to surrender. You can just surrender if you want. And he gave the example of a poor man who is given an opportunity to take a bag of money, you know, and someone gives them, hands them $1 million in a bag and says, here, just take this. And there's an opportunity for that person to just take it. And he compared that to the verse, sarva dharman parityaja mame kam sharanam braja, to just surrender. And I'll take away all your sinful reactions. Do not fear, do not worry, do not hesitate. Generally, we see that there's a gradual process, however, of cleansing of the anartas from within the heart, and it's described as a thickening of faith and a gradual falling away of material desires from within the heart. And some who have performed that process in previous lives, Krishna says in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, they take it up automatically, even without seeking it, it just comes to them, and they start off at the level where they were in the previous life. So there's a continuum. Gradual, let's hear the definition, then I'll say more about gradual.
So gradual, the meaning is advancing or progressing by regular or continuous degrees.
Continuous degrees?
Degrees, yes.
Okay.
And gradual erosion, a gradual slope.
Ooh. So both things, you can gradually progress or you can gradually erode. It's why we have to have strict practice, because Maya is very tricky, and she says if you just let down in this one little area, that's okay. But every discipline or non-discipline affects every other area in our life. It's not isolated. And one little letdown in discipline will then gradually erode. But if we also gradually progress, which is what we're talking about, then over time, for instance, as we've mentioned before, about developing a habit, for instance, in the beginning it may seem implausible to develop a certain habit, but it's like a filament, a very, very thin thread. One little practice one day doesn't seem like much, but if you add another one, another filament and another over time, then you do it for 1 year, 365 filaments, you start to get a rope. And after a while, it becomes so strong and thick that it won't break. So you can develop good habits. You can also develop bad habits. Human life is all about development, however. Animal life is more about moving according to the modes of material nature. And human life means that you can develop new habits. As far as gradual advancement goes, we found some really nice descriptions in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he describes, well, first of all, it's stated by Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sve Sve Adhikarya Nishta Saguna Parikirtita Viparyas Dudosha Syad Ubaryor Esha Nishchayaha. That if one acts according to his or her adhikari, that is a good quality. Means you have a certain level of advancement right now. If you act according to that, whatever you're qualified for, it's good. It's beautiful. And viparyaya means the opposite is also true, that if you act higher than your adhikari, if you try to act more than you're qualified for, achieve more than you're qualified for, then that's a fault. Dosha syad. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about how we gradually advance, and he compares it to climbing a ladder. And he says, so once you have a foot firmly in the rung, then you can move to the next foot, and you have to keep climbing. And so if you don't move ahead when you can, then you'll fall back. It's a cause for fall down. In other words, you have to take advantage when you can move forward and not hesitate to do more when you have more adhikari. And similarly, you shouldn't do less also than your adhikari, because he said that's also a cause for fall down. We were talking, somebody asked a question, I can't remember which class it was in because I've been in so many places recently, I can't remember where this question came from. But someone asked what it means in Srila Prabhupada's purport, and actually it's in a verse as well, that it says that over-dependence on another's mercy is the cause of diminishing the duration of life. It saps your energy if you're overly dependent on another's mercy. Have you read that before? Anyone heard the statement? Anyway, it's there in two places in Prabhupada's books. So someone asked, well, what does that mean? Because don't we take full advantage of mercy, and aren't we fully dependent? And how can we be overly dependent on mercy? I was talking to Niranjana Maharaj about this over the weekend, and we were discussing about how we do get mercy, and if we don't take advantage of it when we get it, and we simply keep saying that I'm not qualified, therefore, you know, I can only depend on the mercy, then we lose our opportunities. As an example, when we get mercy, we have to rise to the occasion and actually make sure that we fully utilize it and become advanced. We can't say that I can't advance, that I can't come to a higher level, because we're supposed to. And eventually we have to fly our own airplane. You've read that in Prabhupada's books, right? Where he says that the acharya can give all kinds of instructions, but we're responsible for taking them fully. And we also, eventually, he gives the analogy, have to fly our own plane, which means that if you go to flight school and you learn how to fly the airplane at one point, the teacher is going to say, okay, you go by yourself. And you'll one day you'll have your first solo flight where you go up by yourself and you have to do all the instrumentation and take off and land yourself. And you have to study and cultivate that and learn how to fly the plane. So the teacher gives you mercy and instructions and everything else, but you have to do it. So if you keep saying that, I can't fly the plane, only the teacher can fly the plane, then you're not taking advantage of the mercy that's being given to you. You have to actually yourself cultivate it and come to a higher position by that process. Mam jayo vyabhichari nam bhakti yogena sevate. You have to do the service. Sagunan samati chaitan brahma bhuya yakalpate. Then you can rise above the modes of material nature and come to the level of Brahman. Also, you know, the word gradual and graduation, where does the word come from and what's the root of the word? Because gradual and graduation both have the word grad in them, right?
The roots, I do not know actually how to look it up, but I'll just read whatever is given.
You'll have to gradually learn how to do that.
Under the section.
Slow degrees.
So
usually at the bottom it'll show.
It says gradualis. Gradus. Gradually. Gradualness. That's all I see in within the brackets.
May I look?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Graduate from Latin. It's at the very bottom. So Latin, graduare, Latin, gradus, means degree. Gradus means degree. What does degree mean? Here. So by degrees, we make advancement. So that means there are, it's like a ladder. There are points at which we have, like when you graduate, when you graduated kindergarten, where'd you go? Did you have kindergarten? Yeah. You had kindergarten. So you graduate kindergarten and you go into first grade and then, you know, gradually you graduate from sixth grade and then go into eighth grade. At least that's how we went. And then into ninth grade. Of course, I quit. And that wasn't very gradual. But my point is there are steps. And just as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, on a ladder, there are various rungs. So although it looks gradual, there are points at which we have to make a next step in the gradual process by degrees, because gratis means degree, right? What does degree mean? Did you look it up? So gradual advancement. Was that the point you brought up? Yeah, I asked about gradual, and you gave the verse. Step by step. Pramanais tat sadacharais tadabhyasir nirantaram. And we're given the formula that there's praman, there's evidence from scripture, and then there's sadachar, there's proper behavior. Ragadvesha vimuktaistu vishan indriyaischaran atmavashar vidayatma prasadam adigachati. It's mentioned by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita that by following the regulative principles of freedom, you can attain the complete mercy of the Lord. So there's a sense of discipline there in sadachar, right? Discipline, the word discipline comes from a root word which means learner. Isn't that interesting? Discipline means, the root of the word means learner. You become a little learner. How to, you know, when you perform some discipline, then you learn some new way to do better service, as an example. Yes, degree?
degree means it has many meanings. The first meaning given is one of a series of steps or stages in a process, course of action, progression, or retrogression.
Okay, and look at all the way at the bottom and find out where it comes from.
Degree D, it says degree degrades, D down gradus step.
Degradus. So that means what? Down?
D means down, gradus step.
Step down, degree. Don't we have any step up? Anyway, this is a sense of advancement in spiritual life, that there's a sense at which we should be constantly taking help from Scripture, and we should be doing the sat achar, which means following the footsteps of the previous acharyas and working and acting in such a way that is elevating us. And abhyas means that we should discipline ourselves to do it over and over again. And within that context, we will get opportunities by degrees to take another step. It'll open to us, in other words, by mercy. Ata Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Graimindre Jivan Mukhi Sevan Mukhi Hijivado Swayameva Spuratyada. By doing this kind of seva with the tongue, it's mentioned here, then gradually you'll get Krishna's mercy. He reveals himself. And one of the ways he reveals himself is by continually giving us more direction from within and from without about how to advance and opportunities to do that. Can anybody think of some situation like that, where the devotee is performing devotional service and then Krishna gives them an opportunity to advance in devotional service as an embellishment or a discussion on advancing gradually? That means by degrees. Grad means step. Anything from... Yes?
Our Bhaktivinoda Thakur's MSF. Malini Mataji gave us a chance. I mean, really encouraged us, okay, to go for a book distribution. And so the book distribution we went, I mean, it really, I mean, was an awesome experience, I would say. It, first of all, introduced us to the reality of the word humility. I mean, how even to do service to someone, you have to get a couple of steps down to help someone else, rather than, I mean, going step up. So that helps. I mean, even to help yourself, you have to go even down so that you could raise yourself up. So that was, I mean, kind of, I feel, I mean, Krishna showed us a way. I mean, that humility is one of the biggest factors that would make you help in advancement in Krishna consciousness and become much more closer. Yeah.
I like the point. It's really nice. Very interesting, almost poetical how you put it, because we had heard degree and it said step down. And it's very interesting here, isn't it? Because by stepping down, amanitvam, adamvitvam, you know, humility, pridelessness, the more you step down, the more you get opportunity to rise up. That's really nice. That was very nice. Thank you. Wow. Slow degrees. Where are examples of slow degrees of advancement? I was thinking also, when you mentioned the Bhaktivinoda Thakur monthly Sankirtan festival, that I have on my wall the first poster that we ever made for the Bhaktivinoda Thakur festival. And it was, I remember that particularly, we were talking about maybe the first one, we didn't have a poster, but one of the first ones, I think we talked about having 50 devotees or something like that, because I was with Keshav Bharti Maharaj. He said, I was at Rakshit's house, and I said, you know, we got 20 devotees to go on Sankirtan. He said, oh, Shivaram Maharaj had 38 or 64 or something like that, right? And I said, that's it. We'll do more. And we said 108. And then I remember some people said that that's way too much. We'll never be able to do it and everything like that. And so then by gradual slow degrees of making improvements, then we've come up. That was definitely a gradual process. And when you look back, there's so many different lessons that we've learned and steps that we've taken that you can't do it all in one step. In other words, we couldn't have gotten from where we were when we first started, which was with about 3 devotees, to where we are now without going through all the steps, which includes making some mistakes and, you know, gradual improvements in many different fronts. And I see it when I go meet with other groups that are just starting, and they'd like to jump up to, you know, fast, but it's required that you gradually pull everything together by steps. Any other evidence about gradual elevation? Yeah? Narada Muni, yes. Microphone.
Narada Muni initially started by serving the great sages, and by gradually serving along his mother, he got an opportunity to see Krishna once, like, and then Krishna said, like, you're not completely purified, so you have to make more advancement, and then that's when he started out, and then gradually he went up, so...
So he didn't do it all at once. He got a little taste, and then he had to take more steps, right? Yes.
This is a very good example of gradual, because it spans a few lifetimes. Uh-huh. It's not just one lifetime.
Yeah. Speaking of whom, Bharat Maharaj was a gradual process, right? Bharat Maharaj left for the forest, and then he had... achieved a very high level of advancement, but then he became distracted in his meditation on a deer. And what does Krishna say when Arjuna asks in the 6th chapter of the Gita about what happens to somebody who's an unsuccessful yogi, yoga brashta? He falls down from the path of yoga. Then what?
There are two situations in which a person can fall down. One is if a person has reached a very high stage and he falls down, then in his next life he takes birth in the family of a transcendentalist. Even without his control or thinking about it, he automatically takes to that path and then, you know, goes back.
And then he makes further progress.
Further progress, yeah. And then still, if he could still take a few more lifetimes to go back. And the other situation is where a person was not that much advanced. So then after death he falls down, then after death he'll be elevated to the higher planetary systems because he did some pious activities. But then he'll enjoy all that and then he'll come down. And he would be born in the family of aristocrats or rich people, so that he gets the facilities to, like, more free time and, you know, less hard work, so that he can devote his free time to devotional activities, yogic activities again. So.
Nice. Very nice. Hansapriya?
The other day I was hearing lecture from Radhanath Swami about a true friend, being a true friend. And he was saying that, he was mentioning his time in New Vrindavan when he was milking the cow. His partner was a person that he couldn't relate. So he said if it was not for serving Srila Prabhupada, he would have been being there, he would have not had that kind of person as his friend. But because they had one central goal of serving Srila Prabhupada, and so they tolerated each other. And over the over 5 months of period, the gradual work, gradual and mutual understanding, and they came to the stage of, respecting each other and kind of liking each other. But before, the 20 times in a day, he would think, I wish I wouldn't have to do this service with him. But gradually they became such a good friend that when Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj passed away, he said that Maharaj would have done anything for Radhanath Maharaj, and Radhanath Maharaj would have done anything for him.
Hmm.
And he said the gradual relationship they built up together, that anything either Maharaj did, they both were so proud of their each other's activity,
hmm.
and they would just love it. So it kind of gave me the realization that even coming to the stage of realizing the relationship among the devotees and coming up to that spiritual platform is also a gradual process.
Hmm.
If awareness is there, we have to just have faith that gradually it works.
That's a nice point about developing relationships, because we're developing relationship with Krishna, and there's a gradual increase in love and trust, not just from, it's not just that it's coming from our side, but it's also from Krishna's side. It's a relationship means two ways. So Krishna's observing how we're surrendering and how we're steady in the relationship and how eager we are. And we're also making gradual increases ourselves as we gain a taste for devotional service. As far as steps go, you know, in the process of sadhana bhakti, it's a regulated, vidhi bhakti means regulated, following the rules and regulations. Really, we're keeping ourselves close to Krishna by that process. The pantratrik system means there are many rules and regulations that are actually keeping us in close contact with Krishna, and also keeping us in a pure state of consciousness, in the mode of goodness. And when we're in mode of goodness and we're also close to Krishna, there are opportunities for having experiences of awakening of our love for Krishna. And it's described by Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar Devotion that in a regulated way, for instance, going to Mangalartik and dressing the deity, then after some time we get a taste for it. But how does that happen? Does it happen immediately or does it happen gradually? What do you think? So if it happens gradually, then there must be little steps. It's degrees, right? Which means there are steps. And so one day, for instance, you might come to Mangalartik and have some kind of transcendent experience. Just a feeling or a thought that you have at that time, because you see the curtains open and you see Krishna and the incense is there and you have a transcendental experience, right? Just even in 1 second. And that gives you a step in experiencing your relationship with Krishna. And then another time you might have another experience, and these kind of experiences gradually increase our taste, and therefore there's no real substitute for maturity. Those who are mature have been through much. In other words, they've gone through a gradual process and experienced many things along the way that have given them a complete and well-rounded experience and realization. So the topic has been a gradual advancement in devotional service and what it actually means. And do you find it helpful or encouraging to talk about the gradual process? Yes? Why? Why does it seem helpful? You can relate it to yourself. Because it's gradually helping you to elevate by hearing about how gradual it is. Yes? Yes?
Also, it's good to know that it's a gradual process and it's not a fast one, so that in the beginning, if you know that, then the frustration will not be there.
Mm. Yeah, nice.
It's not like a material thing in which we just want to get it and get over with it. It's like an endless process in which it continues and continues and continues forever. There's no end to it.
Nice point. Prabhupada And in the verse, bodhayanatmanatmanam bhaktimapyutaman labet, I think that you still have your Brahma Samhita. You could look up the word bodhayan. Atmanatmanam. Awakening. So this word bodhayan means awakening. And Srila Prabhupada says that the process of spiritual life is compared to awakening. And everyone knows what it's like to awaken. When you sleep at night and you get up in the morning, you switch from one state of consciousness to another, gradually. Unless you're a dog, they jump up really fast. It's one thing Chanakya Pandit said, you can learn from a dog how to wake up. You just wake up, ready to go. But there's a gradual awakening process, and where we switch from one state of consciousness to another. So that's another thing that we can relate to the spiritual life, our awakening to spiritual life. That you know, when you first wake up, you may be partially dreaming still, maybe still attached to that dreaming state, and it vanishes, and then you become aware of your duties for the day, and you reawaken, you know, and the sun comes up and everything becomes bright, and there you are. So there's a gradual process in that, and that's what spiritual life is compared to. Even in the verse that you quoted, bodhayanatmanatmanam bhaktimapyutamam labet, and then you can attain the highest level of bhakti, right? Isn't it? Bhaktimapyutama labet means that you'll gain that labha, and you get uttama bhakti gradually through the gradual process. In the Nectar of Instruction, it's mentioned the three levels of devotees, the Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama Adhikari, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that the Kanishta Adhikari, by chanting Hare Krishna, gradually becomes an Uttama Adhikari. So it's not that the Kanishta stays a Kanishta. When he follows the process, the Kanishta Adhikari gradually rises and becomes Uttam. So this is the purpose of human life. It's meant to gradually advance in devotional service. And if we don't put ourselves in a situation where we're making advancement, then it's very likely that we're in a situation where we are devolving, and we can become degraded, actually, if we don't take advantage of it. And as I mentioned earlier, this is a subtle point, but even in our devotional service, in our devotional practice, we always have to be looking for the next rung. We have to be qualified, but that means our foot is on the present rung, and then we should go for the next one so that we're moving up the ladder and not staying in one place or going down. So we'll gradually slip downward if we're not cultivating a discipline that brings us up.